Chapter 41. I beg your pardon, apostrophe interposed Nicholas, doubtful whether he had heard aright. Apostrophe to be crammed, sir, apostrophe repeated Mr. Gregsbury. May I beg your pardon again, if I inquire what you mean, sir? Apostrophe said Nicholas. My meaning, sir, is perfectly plain, apostrophe replied Mr. Gregsbury with a solemn aspect. My secretary would have to make himself master of the foreign policy of the world, as it is mirrored in the newspapers, to run his eye over all accounts of public meetings, all leading articles, and accounts of the proceedings of public bodies, and to make notes of anything which it appeared to him might be made a point of, in any little speech upon the question of some petition lying on the table, or anything of that kind. Do you understand? Apostrophe, I think I do, sir, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Then, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, it would be necessary for him to make himself acquainted, from day to day, with newspaper paragraphs on passing events, such as mysterious disappearance, and supposed suicide of a potboy, or anything of that sort, upon which I might found a question to the Secretary of State for the Home Department. Then, he would have to copy the question, and as much as I remembered of the answer, including a little compliment about independence and good sense, and to send the manuscript in a franc to the local paper, with perhaps half a dozen lines of leader, to the effect that I was always to be found in my place in Parliament, and never shrunk from the responsible and arduous duties, and so forth. You see? Apostrophe, Nicholas bowed. Besides which, apostrophe continued Mr. Gregsbury, I should expect him, now and then, to go through a few figures in the printed tables, and to pick out a few results, so that I might come out pretty well on timber duty questions, and finance questions, and so on. And I should like him to get up a few little arguments about the disastrous effects of a return to cash payments and a metallic currency, with a touch now, and then about the exportation of bullion, and the Emperor of Russia, and banknotes, and all that kind of thing, which it's only necessary to talk fluently about, because nobody understands it. Do you take me? Apostrophe, I think I understand, apostrophe said Nicholas. With regard to such questions as are not political, apostrophe continued Mr. Gregsbury, warming, and which one can't be expected to care a curse about, beyond the natural care of not allowing inferior people to be as well off as ourselves elsewhere are our privileges. I should wish my secretary to get together a few little flourishing speeches of a patriotic cast. For instance, if any preposterous bill were brought forward for giving poor grubbing devils of authors a right to their own property, I should like to say that I for one would never consent to opposing an insurmountable bar to the diffusion of literature among the people, you understand? That the creations of the pocket, being man's, might belong to one man or one family, but that the creations of the brain, being God's, ought as a matter of course to belong to the people at large, and if I was pleasantly disposed, I should like to make a joke about posterity, and say that those who wrote for posterity should be content to be rewarded by the approbation of posterity. It might take with the house, and could never do me any harm, because posterity can't be expected to know anything about me, or my jokes either, do you see? Apostrophe, I see that, sir, apostrophe replied Nicholas. You must always bear in mind, in such cases as this, where our interests are not affected, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, to put it very strong about the people, because it comes out very well at election time, and you could be as funny as you liked about the authors, because I believe the greater part of them live in lodgings, and are not voters. This is a hasty outline of the chief things you'd have to do, except waiting in the lobby every night, in case I forgot anything, and should want fresh cramming, and, now and then, during great debates, sitting in the front row of the gallery, and saying to the people about, "You see that gentleman, with his hand to his face, and his arm twisted round the pillar, that's Mr. Gregsbury, the celebrated Mr. Gregsbury," apostrophe with any other little eulogium that might strike you at the moment. "And for salary," apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, winding up with great rapidity, for he was out of breath, "and for salary, I don't mind saying at once in round numbers, to prevent any dissatisfaction, though it's more than I've been accustomed to give, 15 shillings a week, and find yourself there," apostrophe, with this handsome offer, Mr. Gregsbury once more threw himself back in his chair, and looked like a man who had been most profligately liberal, but is determined not to repent of it notwithstanding. 15 shillings a week is not much," apostrophe said Nicholas, mildly. "Not much. 15 shillings a week, not much, young man," apostrophe cried Mr. Gregsbury. 15 shillings a apostrophe, pray, do not suppose that I quarrel with the sum, sir," apostrophe replied Nicholas, "for I am not ashamed to confess that whatever it may be in itself, to me it is a great deal. But the duties and responsibilities make the recompense small, and they are so very heavy that I fear to undertake them." Apostrophe, do you decline to undertake them, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Gregsbury, with his hand on the bell rope. "I fear they are too great for my powers, however good my will may be, sir," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "That is as much as to say that you would rather not accept the place, and that you consider 15 shillings a week too little," apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, ringing. "Do you decline it, sir?" Apostrophe, "I have no alternative but to do so," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "Door, Matthews," apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, as the boy appeared. "I am sorry I have troubled you unnecessarily, sir," apostrophe said Nicholas. "I am sorry you have," apostrophe rejoined Mr. Gregsbury, turning his back upon him. "Door, Matthews," apostrophe, "good morning, sir," apostrophe said Nicholas. "Door, Matthews," apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mr. Gregsbury. The boy beckoned Nicholas, and tumbling lazily downstairs before him, opened the door, and ushered him into the street. With a sad and pensive air, he retraced his steps homewards. Smike had scraped a meal together from the remnant of last night's supper, and was anxiously awaiting his return. The occurrences of the morning had not improved Nicholas's appetite, and, by him, the dinner remained untasted. He was sitting in a thoughtful attitude, with the plate which the poor fellow had assiduously filled with the choicest morsels, untouched, by his side, when Newman Knox looked into the room. "Come back?" apostrophe, apostrophe asked Newman. "Yes," apostrophe replied Nicholas, "tired to death. And, what is worse, might have remained at home for all the good I have done. Apostrophe, couldn't expect to do much in one morning," apostrophe said Newman. "Maybe so, but I am sanguine, and did expect," apostrophe said Nicholas, "and am proportionately disappointed." Apostrophe saying which, he gave Newman an account of his proceedings. "If I could do anything," apostrophe said Nicholas, "anything, however slight, until Ralph Nickleby returns, and I have eased my mind by confronting him, I should feel happier. I should think it no disgrace to work, heaven knows. Lying indolently here, like a half-tame sullen beast, distracts me." Apostrophe, "I don't know," apostrophe said Newman. "Small things offer they would pay the rent, and more, but you wouldn't like them. No, you could hardly be expected to undergo it." "No, no," apostrophe, "what could I hardly be expected to undergo?" apostrophe, apostrophe asked Nicholas, raising his eyes. "Show me, in this wide waste of London, any honest means by which I could even defray the weekly hire of this poor room, and see if I shrink from resorting to them. Undergo? I have undergone too much, my friend, to feel pride or squeamishness now. except apostrophe added Nicholas hastily, after a short silence, except such squeamishness as is common honesty, and so much pride as constitutes self-respect. I see little to choose, between assistant to a brutal pedagogue, and toad-eater to a mean and ignorant upstart, be he member or no member. Apostrophe, I hardly know, whether I should tell you, what I heard this morning, or not, apostrophe said Newman. Has it reference to what you said just now? Apostrophe asked Nicholas. It has. Apostrophe, then in heaven's name, my good friend, tell it me, apostrophe said Nicholas. For God's sake consider my deplorable condition, and, while I promise to take no step without taking counsel with you, give me, at least, a vote in my own behalf. Apostrophe, moved by this entreaty, Newman stammered forth a variety of most unaccountable and entangled sentences, the upshot of which was, that Mrs. Kenwicks had examined him, at great length that morning, touching the origin of his acquaintance with, and the whole life, adventures, and pedigree of, Nicholas, that Newman had parried these questions, as long as he could, but being, at length, hard-pressed and driven into a corner, had gone so far as to admit that Nicholas was a tutor of great accomplishments, involved in some misfortunes which he was not at liberty to explain, and bearing the name of Johnson. That Mrs. Kenwicks, impelled by gratitude, or ambition, or maternal pride, or maternal love, or all four powerful motives conjointly, had taken secret conference with Mr. Kenwicks, and had finally returned to propose that Mr. Johnson should instruct the four Miss Kenwickses in the French language as spoken by natives, at the weekly stipend of 5 shillings, current coin of the realm, being at the rate of 1 shilling per week, for each Miss Kenwicks, and 1 shilling over, until such time as the baby might be able to take it out in grammar. Which, unless I am very much mistaken, apostrophe observed Mrs. Kenwicks in making the proposition, will not be very long, for such clever children, Mr. Knox, never were born into this world, I do believe. Apostrophe, there, apostrophe said Newman, that's all. It's beneath you, I know. But I thought that perhaps you might. Apostrophe, cried Nicholas, with great alacrity. Of course I shall. I accept the offer at once. Tell the worthy mother so, without delay, my dear fellow, and that I am ready to begin whenever she pleases. Apostrophe, Newman hastened, with joyful steps, to inform Mrs. Kenwicks of his friend's acquiescence, and soon returning, brought back word that they would be happy to see him in the first floor, as soon as convenient, that Mrs. Kenwicks had, upon the instant, sent out to secure a second-hand French grammar and dialogues, which had long been fluttering in the sixpenny box at the bookstall round the corner, and that the family, highly excited at the prospect of this addition to their gentility, wished the initiatory lesson to come off immediately. And here it may be observed, that Nicholas was not, in the ordinary sense of the word, a young man of high spirit. He would resent an affront to himself, or interpose to redress a wrong offered to another, as boldly and freely as any knight that ever set lance in rest, but he lacked that peculiar excess of coolness and great-minded selfishness, which invariably distinguish gentlemen of high spirit. In truth, for our own part, we are disposed to look upon such gentlemen as being rather encumbrances than otherwise in rising families. Happening to be acquainted with several whose spirit prevents their settling down to any groveling occupation, and only displays itself in a tendency to cultivate mustachios, and look fierce, and although mustachios and ferocity are both very pretty things in their way, and very much to be commended, we confess to a desire to see them bred at the owner's proper cost, rather than at the expense of low-spirited people. Nicholas, therefore, not being a high-spirited young man according to common parlance, and deeming it a greater degradation to borrow, for the supply of his necessities, from Newman Knox, than to teach French to the little Kenwickses for 5 shillings a week, accepted the offer with the alacrity already described, and betook himself to the first floor with all convenient speed. Here, he was received by Mrs. Kenwigs with a genteel air, kindly intended to assure him of her protection and support, and here too, he found Mr. Lillivick and Miss Pettiker, the four Miss Kenwigses on their form of audience, and the baby in a dwarf porter's chair with a deal tray before it, amusing himself with a toy horse without a head, the said horse being composed of a small wooden cylinder, not unlike an Italian iron, supported on four crooked pegs, and painted an ingenious resemblance of red wafers set in blacking. "How do you do, Mr. Johnson?" said Mrs. Kenwigs. "Uncle Mr. Johnson. How do you do, sir?" said Mr. Lillivick rather sharply, for he had not known what Nicholas was on the previous night, and it was rather an aggravating circumstance if a tax collector had been too polite to a teacher. "Mr. Johnson is engaged as private master to the children, uncle," said Mrs. Kenwigs. "So you said just now, my dear," replied Mr. Lillivick. "But I hope," said Mrs. Kenwigs, drawing herself up, that will not make them proud, but that they will bless their own good fortune, which has borne them superior to common people's children. Do you hear, Morlina?"
"Yes, ma," replied Miss Kenwigs.
"And when you go out in the streets, or elsewhere, I desire that you don't boast of it to the other children," said Mrs. Kenwigs, "and that if you must say anything about it, you don't say no more than we've got a private master comes to teach us at home, but we ain't proud, because ma says it's sinful. Do you hear, Morlina?"
"Yes, ma," replied Miss Kenwigs again.
"Then mind you recollect, and do as I tell you," said Mrs. Kenwigs. "Shall Mr. Johnson begin, uncle?"
"I am ready to hear, if Mr. Johnson is ready to commence, my dear," said the collector, assuming the air of a profound critic. "What sort of language do you consider French, sir?"
"How do you mean?"
asked Nicholas.
"Do you consider it a good language, sir?"
said the collector. "A pretty language, a sensible language?"
"A pretty language, certainly," replied Nicholas. "And as it has a name for everything, and admits of elegant conversation about everything, I presume it is a sensible one."
"I don't know," said Mr. Lillivick, doubtfully.
"Do you call it a cheerful language, now?"
"Yes," replied Nicholas. "I should say it was, certainly."
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.